Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sutter, joined by a very special guest, my co-host. You guys know him. I was just teasing around with you there, Brennan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brennan on Twitter at BrennanClean14. Also, follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And we're joining you guys, I believe, about 45 minutes after the game ended, around an hour or so. Just got back to my place and we're recording. Brennan, what was your initial thoughts from tonight's game? Just diving into it right now, we'll get into the Booker injury in just a minute. Devin Booker, by the way, sprained his left ankle. I would guess he's out for the season now with only 3 games remaining. We'll get into that in just a second. The Suns lost 118-97 to the Utah Jazz once again. 4 out of 4 now the Suns have lost by at least 17 points. I think the numbers are 17 points, 24, 27, and now 21. So the Jazz really own the Suns this year.
Yeah, it was kind of exciting to start to see that the Suns put up a much better fight early on in this one. I guess that was similar to the last home game against the Jazz, where the Suns were tight for most of the first half and then Utah blew it open. But it felt like they got out to a 10-0 lead. They were up by 9 when Booker got injured. It would have been interesting to see how this game would have gone if Booker had been in there the whole time, because they were playing more aggressively. I think Rashawn Holmes had a better night against Rudy Gobert than DeAndre Ayton did the other 2 games. So all that stuff was kind of working well. And then obviously everyone, I think, knew when Booker left the game, that was pretty much it. And I think the results bared that out. They really don't have the talent to compete with Utah in the first place, but especially without their best player, it was going to be a long shot. And we saw that happen the rest of the game. They just kind of slowly blew open the lead, and we got to see some good games from some of the other guys. And I think that'll be what the rest of this season is about if Booker does miss it. But I guess we got a little bit of a taste in that those first 8 minutes, but the rest of it was just as ugly as the rest.
Yeah, Devin Booker, in his 8 minutes, he had 8 points on 3 of 4 field goal attempts, well on his way, I think, to another 30-40-point game against the Utah Jazz. But let me ask you this. Just, we saw really them stay in this game for a little bit. Were you surprised by just how much they were able to stay in this game? I know there's some peaks and valleys at some points, but this brought it back to, I believe, single digits in the third quarter before the Utah Jazz ultimately just blew it open in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think the second and third quarters, it was sort of surprising that they were able to keep it relatively close. But, you know, I think they were playing hard. We've seen them, that Denver win in January without Booker kind of was the blueprint for how well they've played at times, just using energy, mucking the game up a little bit. And they were kind of just doing that for the most part, getting some offense from unlikely places. But yeah, it was, I guess, good to see if you're a fan and you're hoping the young guys kind of respond to something like that. We'll talk about Eli Okobo in the second segment. I think he was probably the main guy that I'm talking about when it comes to unlikely offense. But we should just probably talk about Booker now, which was just an awkward fall.
By the way,
are stacking up.
We just got some breaking news here from Jordan Schultz, who is now at ESPN. He just tweeted, Devin Booker will shut it down for the remainder of the Suns' 3 games, a lead source tells ESPN, after suffering a left ankle sprain on Wednesday. So if we're trusting Jordan Schultz here, Devin Booker's been officially shut down.
Yeah, there we go. So he just, pretty normal play, right? I mean, just kind of went up and as he landed, twisted his ankle. We've seen that. We're all just so used to seeing that now. We could probably be doctors ourselves operating on these ankles with how many of these guys, like, what is it? It's probably half the roster at this point that has suffered some sort of ankle injury at some point this season. It's really crazy. I don't remember any team having the same exact injury so many times in 1 year, but here we are.
Yeah, it's crazy just to see the last month or so, Brent. I mean, have you seen a season like this where the Suns were kind of snake bitten at the best point of their season, where Johnson, Oubre, Booker, Ayton, Bridges, those five guys really gelling together. Then all of a sudden, Tyler Johnson, then Kelly Oubre 3 days later, DeAndre, and 2 weeks later, now Devin Booker. It just seems like this team can't really catch a break at all recently with the injuries.
Yeah, I guess Tyler Johnson, the only guy who didn't suffer the same injury. It's pretty weird. But no, obviously, like I said, I've never seen anything like this. And obviously it's a common injury for basketball, but just weird how it's been the same exact one so often on simple plays too. It's not like we've seen guys get stepped on or kicked or, you know, trip or something. It's been just landing the wrong way. So it's fortunate, I guess you could say, that these end of the season games haven't mattered so much. If the Suns were better this year and somehow were in the playoff race or something like that, or, you know, they were actually playing meaningful games and this was happening, that would be even worse. So it's not so, like we said, it's really just another, even with another opportunity for, but yeah, just a fluke bad luck for this team with the same injury in so many different places.
Yeah, it really is unfortunate. But I guess this is kind of the season they've had, just starting off really the peak of their season was the opening game. And then after that, kind of just peaks and valleys. And we saw a 4-game win streak. Then we saw a 5 out of 7 win streak. Then all these injuries happen now. And just a disappointing end of the season when they're really finding their mojo at the right time here. But now with the official news of Booker being shut down, we're going to have just a little discussion here about if they should bring Booker back. But with him officially being shut down, I just want to hear your thoughts now about your thoughts on that, because it seemed like with obviously none of the severity of the ankle sprain, there's no MRI, but the x-rays were confirmed negative per Suns PR we spoke to tonight. And from my point of view, if it was a light ankle sprain, I know before the Jordan Schultz report here just happened, it seemed like I thought Booker would come back. But what was your initial reaction? And did you think Booker would have come back if it wasn't for this latest tweet from Jordan Schultz saying he shut it down?
I thought that it would have made sense for him to come back if for all intents and purposes, they've been operating for the most part differently than they had in the past. You know, we saw Josh Jackson come back. That was unexpected. We've seen Booker continue to play his normal minutes load, especially in competitive games, upwards of 35 minutes every night. So I felt like if it wasn't anything major, we were going to see him. So maybe this just means it's just enough of you know, the pain or whatever it is there that they're just not going to do. We're not going to risk that. That's probably smart if you have any sense of doubt about it, but it would have been nice to hope for him to have a chance. But again, these games weren't going to matter anyway. I think my real reaction here isn't so much about whether that made sense. It really is something dating back to basically when the rest of these guys filtered out of the lineup, Tyler Johnson and Kelly Oubre especially, where we just saw Booker, and of course, you know, he's putting on a show, he's putting up historical numbers, wowing every, you know, fan and clearly the national media every night, but I wrote as much, and it didn't make sense to me that with how little importance these games had, for him to be getting 40, 42 minutes, no matter how many points he's scoring. That's the way that you handle somebody if you're expecting an injury. Or I guess, you know, the Suns weren't doing it in order for him to get injured, but that's what these guys, that's how it works for these guys. The DeMarcus Cousins injury was one that brought a lot of attention to how much this burden on players, especially late in the season, can have on their bodies. And I think this is an example. I mean, we won't ever know. There's not going to be a doctor who goes in and says, yep, those 42 minutes against the Pelicans really did him in. But it's clearly a connection here. Guys who play see injured, and here we are. He got injured. And it's a simple play, nothing incredible. And it's just that nick or fall that can really do you in when you're at the end of this season playing that many minutes. And I think that was a mistake.
Yeah, there's a good point to bring up there, obviously, with the workload, and especially in games that don't matter. The Suns are 18-61 now. There's 3 games left. There's really no point as far as bringing him back. But I see what you're saying there as far as that, because it does make sense, your theory about the 40-plus minutes. I think Booker was leading, and you probably might know this better than I. Was he leading in the minutes per game in the NBA over that stretch? I think he might have been.
I didn't check as far as minutes per game, but he was at about 40 for the past couple weeks.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that does say something. Maybe there is a
correlation. Yeah, at one point he averaged 40 over like 4 games.
Wow. Yeah, that does kind of – maybe there is a correlation there. It kind of speaks to it, and really maybe it's an example of what's to come next year. If the Suns hopefully aren't in this position next year where the last few games of the season don't matter, but if Booker is in a similar situation next year – we'll be surprised takes a little more conservative next time around. But anything else you want to hit on as far as Booker goes before we go on our next segment?
No, we'll definitely spend some time talking about his season more heavily in the future, but for now, just kind of be happy that it's not anything too extreme, I guess.
Yeah. By the way, his season numbers were 26.5 points, 4.1 rebounds, 6.8 assists on a 58.4 true shooting percentage. Pretty good for a guy who's only 22 years old. So this guy's definitely a limit for a guy like Devin Booker. But before we go on to our next summit here, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you haven't already done so, go ahead and give us a follow at Locked On NBA Net. It's one of our valuable resources out there on NBA Twitter. Brent and I both have our accounts signed for the Phoenix Suns coverage you guys love here on Locked On Suns. But if you want to get a taste, a national taste of the NBA with the playoffs now really zooming up in front of us here, less than 2 weeks away, you guys should really start getting in on Locked On NBA. Get your daily taste of the NBA from every direction possible. All 30 NBA teams cover for us as well. So go ahead and give us a follow over there at Locked On NBA Net to keep up with the action.
Want to also tell you guys about Homie. If you are looking to buy or sell a home this year, anytime in the near future, make sure that the first place you check is Homie. They not only save you a whole ton of money, but they make the process easy, simple. The concern, anxiety of dealing with this process that normally goes into it. They know how stressful that can be. They know how overwhelming it can be to navigate the world of, you know, real estate agents and checking this house and that house. And they want to take that out of your hands and deal with that for you, make it cheaper, make it easier. And they've been really successful doing that. So hold your home for just $1,500, a flat rate of $1,500 to list it on the market and close on that home, just $1,500. That means that on average, customers over at Homie are saving over $10,000. So they back it up, right? They don't just say they want to save you money and then try to make some money off of you on the back end or anything like that. They really mean it when they say it, and the numbers speak for themselves. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie. Actually, we got a new code for you guys. Text SUNS. Make it a little more personalized. Text SUNS, S-U-N-S, of course, to 88588. Again, that's SUNS, S-U-N-S, to 88588. Alrighty, let's move on here to some of the positives from this game. Like we said, the Suns were a little bit more competitive in this one than we would expect, especially once Booker went out. And I think the first place to start with that would be Ilya Okobo. Second consecutive start with the point guard rotation still kind of fluctuating night to night, but made the most of it. And I think one of his better games, especially offensively, in quite a while.
Yeah, 15 points for him on 6-11 shooting in 25 minutes. But for me, I want to get your assessment of this. Was this the most aggressive we've seen Ilya Okobo since that Clippers game in October? Because I think it definitely was.
It felt like he was just comfortable and didn't really look – I mean, he kind of just has been the picture-perfect rookie point guard all year, just kind of looked like a chicken with his head off for a lot of different ways throughout the year. Defensively, just kind of lost. Offensively, if he's not just kind of spotting up as a shooter or attacking the basket, he doesn't look much better that end. So he just looked comfortable, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I just think he really kind of took the reins for a couple possessions there once Booker went out, which kind of surprised me a little bit. And really, Igor was running the offense a few sets for Ilya Okobo, which is nice to see. And kind of comparing these two guards real quick, Ilya Okobo, DeAnthony Melton, the Suns' two rookie point guards, it just, the gap between offense and defense between those two guys is just, they're like opposite day, so to say. I feel like DeAnthony Melton is a good team defender. Okobo is a horrible team defender. But on the other end, on offense, Okobo really is in another level compared to DeAnthony Melton.
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely shows up when Okobo gets in rhythm early. What we've been able to see over the past month or so, it's been so kind of bizarre with the way the rotation shakes out night to night that it hasn't really been highlighted so much. It almost seems like it's happened by accident a few times here, but we have gotten to see Melton and Okobo on the court together. Obviously, we know Booker will be a huge part of the plans going forward, but those guys fitting is kind of important to see if you can keep both of them or just kind of, you know, mixing and matching all the guards on this roster, I think is an important thing to see. Do you feel like it makes sense that we could see both of those guys in the future? Have you liked what you've seen when they both shared the court? Do you think it makes sense to keep two young guards next season when they try to be more competitive? We've just seen a little more of these guys lately. What have your impressions been?
I think from that standpoint, it all just depends on what happens May 14th. If they get number one, number two, a John Morant, let's just say they get number two and land John Morant. I think one of those guys is definitely gone. Maybe both of them are gone at that point, just because I think Morant becomes the top flight alpha dog in that point guard group. But I think the more I've been thinking about Brent, I think we're on the same page here. I just think there's no way that two of Ryan McDaniel's own picks that he had. I mean, I don't know how much James Jones has to say in it, but it just seems like one or both those guys, there's going to be a decision that has to be made this offseason. I think if a trade package is to be made for to improve the team, I think one of Okobo or Melton you throw in that package.
Yeah, and I think they've both played well enough to feel okay about their trade value as well. Obviously not going to be the centerpiece of any major deal, but I think they would still have some value around the league. So that hasn't gone away for them. I definitely think the idea of kind of thinking about everybody through the lens of how this front office, especially as it continues, how the new people will see these players. And we don't know what how each guy was viewed by individual members of the front office in the past, but I think it is fair to imagine that Jones wasn't a heavy part of the scouting situation before he took over as general manager, and still doesn't seem to be super involved in that regard. So I think his judgment of a lot of these guys is kind of, what have you done for me lately? How do you look? How have you improved? How do you fit on this team with these other young players? And I mean, I think the reality is neither one has necessarily gone above and beyond expectation in that regard, where you can't possibly give them up. So I think it's easy to imagine both going away, but they've both played well enough that if they were on the roster, I think you'd be pretty happy with that as well. So kind of a neutral season, and I think we'll continue to see more of them. But Holmes was the other guy that I would want to highlight tonight. I think he did a better job against Gobert than Ayton did.
For sure. Yeah, I wanted to hit on Rashawn Holmes as well. He played 16. He had 16 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block on 8 of 16 shooting in 38 minutes. Kudos to Rashawn Holmes, too, because I imagine you saw this, too, where he rolled his ankle, but he toughed it out. I mean, looking at in person at Talks Resort Arena, he was writhing in pain. He was jumping around the huddle trying to get off of that ankle. It looked pretty bad at first, almost like Devin Booker's, but kudos to him for fighting through that injury. And he was talking about post-game, just with Booker being down, with all these guys being down, he felt like it was on him to stay out there and fight through it. And I think that's a really cool thing that Rashawn Holmes did. Just goes to show what kind of guy and what kind of character he is to the rest of the team. And I'm not saying that this kind of sealed my fate as far as keeping him next year, but just these kind of games where he's an all-around impactful guy and you see an energetic guy who's kind of a no-nonsense attitude, really handles himself well against Rudy Gobert. And if they are thinking about keeping Rashawn Holmes next year for a backup center, I'm really just a fan of that at this point.
Yeah, it's been nice to see him return to just the overall impact, like you said, on and off the court that he had, that really, you know, shocked and impressed all of us so much earlier this season. It's nice to see him end the year like he started it, I guess. And was impressive to see him stay out there. He really lingered back in the backcourt when the play got to the other side of the court for a while, and I was worried, and seeing it, the camera moved away from him, and I was like, man, if he's still laying down there, it's really not going to be pretty. And then he comes and goes, sets the screen. I'm like, all right, he's back, he's playing. So that was impressive and obviously needed with how thin everything already is. The only other play I would highlight from Holmes, and he's really the only other player in general that I think impressed me tonight, was that he got Gobert out of his shoes. He like pump faked a floater, which is not even a shot Gobert should ever be afraid of. And Rudy jumped up in the air, and Holmes got a dunk on him, which you don't see people outsmart Rudy Gobert like that very often. That's a guy who might be a back-to-back defensive player of the year. So that was impressive. Definitely not the kind of savvy we see from Ayton. So just nice to get a longer look at Holmes and see him playing so well.
Yeah, for sure. I really like this game from Rashawn Holmes. One of his best games of the year, in my opinion, even though it wasn't a 21-point loss for the Phoenix Suns. But just really some quick hitters as far as tier players, just some quick bullet point notes. Dragan Bender had a poster dunk tonight, if you guys didn't know, which was pretty crazy to see. I thought I'd never see that.
And one, too,
which is even better. I mean, who would have thought that we'd even be saying that in the year 2019 with Dragan Bender? But Jared Ferdet also, 10 points, 5-11 from the field, 22 minutes. It was just a weird atmosphere tonight. I mean, not weird, so to say, but just like it was a Jimmer atmosphere as far as there were so many Jazz fans, so many Suns fans there. They're all cheering for Jimmer. Every time he had the ball, shoot it. And he definitely did. I mean, he took 11 shots in 22 minutes. So kudos to him. But also, I saw at the end of the game there, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Jimmer was trying to shoot at the very end of it when they're down by 21. But then Igor tapped him on the butt and said, no, don't shoot it, and just have him dribble out the rest of the clock. So it's just interesting. It's quick two bullet points on Dragan Bender and Jimmer Fredette, because I think they just deserve some notes in that, just from the atmosphere and just from those plays alone.
Yeah, those are probably the other two guys too. Just weird basketball. April basketball is very bizarre. Suns fans have gotten way too much 20th men playing in these games over the years, but it's definitely some fun moments that you don't forget, with maybe, you know, an Alec Peters type performance here and there. Maybe we'll get another one of those, who knows. But Jimmer still has not made a three with the Suns, which is just weird, and I think indicates how crazy his year has been, going all the way from the basketball tournament up in the Northeast to China, back to Phoenix, and a lot of basketball, and I think his legs are showing that. But before we move on here, give you guys a couple numbers to chew on as we think about this 79th game of the Suns season. I want to remind you guys to check out the Locked On NBA show. And if you're not already, if you haven't already, not only Locked On NBA, but our show right here, check it out on the Himalaya podcast app. Check out Locked On NBA, Locked On Suns, any of the shows on the network through the Himalaya podcast app. It's super easy to use, super nice, pretty looking app. I checked it out for myself around the time we started up this partnership with them, and it's really a cool place. If you don't have an iPhone especially, but even if you do, you know, change it up, check something else out. There's some exclusive content on there. There's just an easier way to navigate, honestly. So check out what's going on with Himalaya and make sure you're making our shows the number one priority when you get there. Alrighty, let's swing over to numbers here. And to me, I mean, there's a ton to choose from. It was, especially when you dig in statistically, not really a close contest here. But the number one thing to me, and this showed up throughout the game, was Utah's three-point shooting. 16 of 32, so I guess my number would be 50, which is percent they shot from behind the arc. Everybody, really, but especially Joe Ingles and George Niang, just unconscious from back there. Two guys you don't expect to be that hot ever, and they both had it going, and I think that was kind of the big difference. And especially when Donovan Mitchell adds into it, he's really not that good of a three-point shooter right now, and even he added into the onslaught from back there. So uncharacteristic night, but not a lot of defense by the Suns either.
No, it was a three-point barrage, especially from those two guys that combined for, like you said, Joe Ingles had 27 points and 6 of 8 from 3. Donovan Mitchell, 29 points and 4 of 7 from 3. I wanted to ask you this really quickly, though. Joe Ingles, super impressive in person once more. He also had 8 assists, 5 rebounds. The more I think about it, and also Dave King brought up the game, and I think we brought this up on the podcast before a few months ago, but I think Joe Ingles is actually a legit, really good comp for a guy like Mikal Bridges.
I mean, if you want him to get that offense, for sure. Offensively, that's a nice, I guess, just kind of like an upper echelon comparison for any end of the league to diversify set to that level. Ingles has been coming into the like 3 points, but there's so much more than that. I think Bridges, you'd hope, would be able to leverage his athleticism, finishes around the rim that are impressive, and that maybe, I guess, you can be optimistic. He's probably has a higher, as far as, you know, level scoring than Ingles does. But I mean, that guy's a legit shooter. That guy's a 40%. His contract seemed like an overpay. Like, okay, signing this deal just to get Gordon Hayward to stick around, but he just made that. I feel like he's a team, and I don't feel bad about that. You know, he's a good player, and anyone that turned into a Joe Ingles would be pretty happy.
Oh, for sure. I think that's just a top end as far as offensive upside goes. I think defense Bridges hasn't beat, but the more I see this as a smart basketball IQ guy, I think just he checks a lot of those boxes. McCopers could eventually, in my opinion. But let me go to my number to watch here, Brandon. For me, it's actually the opposite of what you just did. The Suns' three-point percentage, which is 5 of 21, 23.8%. Just an egregious night from behind the arc for the Phoenix Suns. And another bonus, one I just want to throw in really quickly, I saw this on Twitter from Duncan Smith, the Athletic. In four games, just guess Jimmer's net rating.
Oh, gosh. Minus 15 or something like that?
Minus 43.2.
Yeah. It hasn't been pretty. He's been pretty bad. And we know what the bench looks like here in Phoenix. So that's not going to be a number to carry into free agency that he'll want to tout anywhere.
No, not at all. So, I mean, anything else as far as tonight's game goes, Brent? I mean, who would have thought that the Suns would lose by 21 when they went on the offensive rebounds, which have been harping on throughout the past few months. They doubled their assist turnover ratio at 21 to 10 as far as assist turnovers go. Even shooting plus 45%, they still lose by 21 points. Just one of those weird nights.
Yeah, no, nothing else. I think the Jazz kind of have their number right now. And unfortunately, any team that can execute the way that Utah can is just bad news for the Suns. So we might see one more win this year, but it was not going to happen tonight.
Yeah, personally, I think, especially with no Booker now, this might be it for the Suns as far as wins go. 18 wins. That is ahead of the franchise record, I believe, which was at 16 or 17. But as far as last year's go, 21, they're going to be way below, or a few games below that 18. So in my opinion, maybe they do sneak in a win here. But they only have three games left, so at the best, they can just tie that with 21 wins. So appreciate you guys listening in. As always, we'll be back to you guys tomorrow for next episode. But before I let you go, final score recap one more time for you guys. 118-97, the Utah Jazz beat the Phoenix Suns to drop them to 18-61 this season. So appreciate you guys listening in. We'll be back to you guys tomorrow for next episode.